about everything. I'd be delighted, said Torvald, with real pleasure, and gestured for one of his own servants to accompany them also. They strolled together in a small party, Laurent and Torvald in front, and Damon and the servant following a few steps behind. The balcony had a bench for courtiers to recline on, and a shadowed alcove for servants to discreetly retire to. Damon, his proportions suited to battle, was not built to be discreet, but if Laurent insisted on dragging him about by the neck, he could suffer the intrusion or find a balcony with a bigger alcove. It was a warm night, and the air was perfumed with all the beauty of the gardens. Conversation unfolded easily between the two men, who surely had nothing at all in common. But, of course, Laurent was good at talking. "What news from Akelos?" Laurent asked Torvald at one point. "You were there recently." Damon looked at him, startled. Laurent being Laurent, the topic was not an accident. From anyone else it would have been kindness. He couldn't help his pulse quickening at his first word of home.
"Have you ever visited the capital at Eos?" asked Torvald.
Laurent shook his head.
"It's very beautiful, a white palace built high on the cliffs to command the ocean. On a clear day you can look out and see Esthema across the water. But it was a dark place when I arrived. The whole of the city was still in mourning for the old king and his son. That terrible business. And there were some factional disputes among the Kairoi. The beginnings of conflict, dissent."
"Theomedes united them," said Laurent. "You don't think Castor can do the same?"
"Perhaps. His legitimacy is an issue. One or two of the Kairoi have royal blood running through their veins. Not as much as Castor, but gotten inside of a marriage bed, that situation breeds discontent."
"What impression did you have of Castor?" asked Laurent.
"A complicated man," said Torvald, "born in the shadow of a throne. But he does have many of the qualities needed in a king. Strength, judiciousness, ambition."
"Is ambition needed in a king?" said Laurent. "Or is it simply needed to become king?"
After a pause, "I heard those rumors, too, that the death of Damianos was no accident, but I don't credit them. I saw Castor in his grief. It was genuine. It cannot have been an easy time for him to have lost so much and gained so much all in the space of a moment."
"That is the fate of all princes destined for a throne," said Laurent.
Torvald favored Laurent with another of those long, admiring looks that were starting to come with grating frequency. Damon frowned. Laurent was a nest of scorpions in the body of one person. Torvald looked at him and saw a buttercup. To hear that Akelos was weakened was as painful as Laurent must have meant it to be. Damon's mind tangled with the thought of factional disputes and dissent. If there was unrest, it would come first from the northern provinces, Sicyon, maybe, and Delpha. The arrival of a servant, trying not to show that he was out of breath, forestalled whatever Torvald might have said next.
"Your Highness, forgive my interruption. The regent sends that he is awaiting you inside."
"I've kept you to myself too long," said Laurent.
"I wish we had more time together," said Torvald, showing no inclination to rise.
The regent's face, when he saw the two princes enter the room together, was a series of unsmiling lines. Though his greeting to Torvald was genial, and all the right formalities were exchanged. Torvald's servant bowed and departed. It was what etiquette demanded, but Damon could not follow his example, not unless he was prepared to wrench the leash bodily out of Laurent's hand. "Formalities done," the regent said.
"Could you excuse my nephew and me for a moment?"
His gaze came to rest heavily on Laurent. It was Torvald's turn to withdraw good-naturedly. Damon assumed that he was to do the same, but he felt Laurent's grip tighten subtly on the leash.
Nephew, you were not invited to these discussions.
And yet here I am. It's very irritating, isn't it? Said Laurent.
The regent said, This is serious business between men. It's no time for childish games.
I seem to recall being told to take on more responsibility, said Laurent. It happened in public with a great deal of ceremony. If you don't remember it, check your ledgers. You came out of it richer by 2 estates and enough revenue to choke every horse in the stables.
If I thought you were here to take on responsibility, I'd welcome you to the table with open arms. You have no interest in trade negotiations. You've never applied yourself seriously to anything in your life.
Haven't I? Well, then it's nothing serious, Uncle. You have no cause to worry.
Damon saw the regent's eyes narrow. It was an expression that reminded him of Laurent, but the regent said only, I expect appropriate behavior, before preceding them to the entertainments, displaying far more patience than Laurent deserved. Laurent didn't follow immediately. His gaze stayed on his uncle.
Your life would be a lot easier if you stopped baiting him, said Damon.
This time, coldly, flatly.
I told you to shut up.
Chapter 8. Expecting a slave's inconspicuous place on the sidelines, Damon was surprised to find himself seated beside Laurent, albeit with a cool distance of 9 inches interposed between them. He wasn't sitting half in his lap, as Ansel was with his master across the way. Laurent sat consciously well. He was dressed severely, as always, though his clothing was very fine, as befitting his rank. No jewelry, except for a fine gold circlet on his brow that was mostly hidden by the fall of his golden hair. When they sat, he unclipped Damon's leash, wound it around the handler's rod, then tossed it to one of the attendants, who managed to catch it with only a slight fumble. The table stretched out. On the other side of Laurent sat Torvald, evidence of a small coup for Laurent. On the other side of Damon was Nicaise, possibly also evidence of a coup for Laurent. Nicaise was separated from Counselor Odin, who sat elsewhere, close by the regent. Nicaise didn't seem to have a master anywhere near him. It seemed like a blunder of etiquette to have Nicaise at the high table, considering the sensibilities of the patrons. But Nicaise was dressed respectably and wore very little paint. The only flash of pet gaudiness was a long earring in his left ear. 2 sapphires dangled, almost brushing his shoulder, too heavy for his young face. In every other way, he could be mistaken for a member of the nobility. No one from Patras would suppose that a child catamite sat at table alongside royalty. Torvald would likely make the same incorrect assumption Damon had made, and think that Nicaise was somebody's son or nephew, despite the earring. Nicaise also sat well. His beauty at close range was striking. So was his youth. His voice, when he spoke, was unbroken. It had the clear, fluting tone of a knife tapped against crystal, without cracks.
I don't want to sit next to you, said Nicaise. Fuck off.
Instinctively, Damon looked around to see if anyone from the patron delegation had heard, but no one had. The first course of meat had arrived, and the food had everyone's attention. Nicaise had picked up a gilt, 3-pronged fork, but had paused before sampling the dish in order to speak. The fear he'd shown of Damon at the ring seemed to still be there. His knuckles, clenched around the fork, were white. It's all right, said Damon. He spoke to the boy as gently as he could. I'm not going to hurt you. Nicaise stared back at him. His huge blue eyes were fringed like a whore's, or like a doe's. Around them, the table was a colored wall of voices and laughter, courtiers caught up in their own amusements, paying them no attention.
Good, said Nicaise, and stabbed the fork viciously into Damon's thigh under the table.
Even through a layer of cloth, it was enough to make Damon start,
and instinctively grabbed the fork as three drops of blood welled up.
"Excuse me for a moment," Laurent said smoothly, turning from Torvald to face Nicaise. "I made your pet jump," said Nicaise, smugly, not sounding at all displeased.
"Yes, you did. Whatever you're planning, it's not going to work."
"I think it will, though. Bet you your earring."
"If I win, you wear it," said Nicaise. Laurent immediately lifted his cup and inclined it towards Nicaise in a little gesture, sealing the bet. Damon tried to shake the bizarre impression that they were enjoying themselves. Nicaise waved an attendant over and asked for a new fork. Without a master to entertain, Nicaise was left free to prick at Damon. He began with a stream of insults and explicit speculation about Damon's sexual practices, pitched in a voice too quiet for anyone else to hear. When at length he saw that Damon was not rising to this bait, he turned his commentary on Damon's owner.
"You think sitting at the high table with him means something? It doesn't. He won't fuck you. He's frigid."
This subject was almost a relief. No matter how crude the boy was, there was nothing he could say about Laurent's proclivities that Damon had not already heard speculated about extensively and in coarse language by bored guards on indoor duty.
"I don't think he can. I think it doesn't work, what he has. When I was younger, I used to think he'd had it cut off. What do you think? Have you seen it?"
"When he was younger?" Damon said. "He hasn't had it cut off." Nicaise's eyes narrowed. Damon said, "How long have you been a pet in this court?"
3 years, said Nicaise, in the sort of tone that said, "You won't last here 3 minutes."
Damon looked at him and wished he hadn't asked. Whether he had a child's mind or not, physically Nicaise had not yet crossed over from child to adolescent. He was still prepubescent. He looked younger than any of the other pets Damon had seen at this court, all of whom had at least passed puberty.
3 years.
The patron delegation continued oblivious. With Torvald, Laurent was on his best behavior. He had apparently, incredibly, divested himself of malice and washed his mouth out with soap. He talked intelligently about politics and about trade, and if every now and then a little edge glimmered, it came across as wit, not barbed, just enough to say, "You see, I can keep up." Torvald showed less and less inclination to look at anyone else. It was like watching a man smile as he surrendered himself to drown in deep water. Thankfully, it did not go on too long, and a miracle of restraint, there were only 9 courses, served, ribboned, and artfully arranged on jeweled plates by attractive pages. The pets themselves served not at all. Sitting nestled alongside their owners, some of them were hand-fed, and one or two even brazenly helped themselves, playfully filching choice morsels from their masters, like pampered lapdogs who had learned that whatever they do, their doting owners will find them charming.
"It's a shame I haven't been able to arrange for you to view the slaves," said Laurent, as the pages began to cover the table with sweets.
"You don't need to. We saw palace slaves in Akalos. I don't think I've ever seen slaves of that quality, even in Basil. And I trust your taste, of course."
"I'm glad," said Laurent.
Damon was aware that beside him, Nicaise had started intently listening.
"I'm sure my uncle will agree to the exchange if you push for it strongly enough," said Laurent.
"If he does, I will owe it to you," said Torvald.
Nicaise got up from the table. Damon bridged the 9 chilly inches at the first opportunity.
"What are you doing? You were the one who warned me about Nicaise."
He spoke in a low voice. Laurent went very still. Then he deliberately shifted in his seat and leaned in, bringing his lips right to Damon's ear.
"I think I'm out of stabbing range. He's got short arms. Or perhaps he'll try to throw a sugar plum. That is difficult. If I duck, he'll hit Torvald."
Damon gritted his teeth.
"You know what I meant. He heard you. He's going to act. Can't you do something about it?
I'm occupied.
Then let me do something. Bleed on him, said Laurent.
Damon opened his mouth to reply and found his words stopped by the startling touch of Laurent's fingers against his lips, a thumb brushing his jawline. It was the sort of absent touch that any master at the table might give to a pet, but from the shocked reaction that rolled over the courtiers at the table, it was clear that Laurent did not do this sort of thing often, or ever.
My pet was feeling neglected, Laurent apologized to Torvald.
He's the captive caster sent you to train, said Torvald, curiously. He's safe?
He looks combative, but he's really very docile and adoring, said Laurent.
Like a puppy.
A puppy, said Torvald.
To demonstrate, Laurent picked up a confection of crushed nuts and honey and held it out to Damon as he had at the ring, between thumb and forefinger.
Sweet meat, said Laurent.
In the stretched-out moment that followed, Damon thought explicitly about killing him. Damon leaned in. It was sickly sweet. He didn't let his lips touch Laurent's fingers. A great many people were looking at them. Laurent washed his fingers fastidiously in the gold washing bowl when he was done, and dried them on a little square cloth of silk. Torvald stared. In Patras, slaves fed masters, peeling fruit and pouring drinks, not the other way around. It was that way also in Akalos. The conversation recovered from its pause and turned to trivial matters. Around them, the creations of sugar and candied spices and glazed pastries in fantastical shapes were slowly being demolished. Damon looked around for Nikkei's, but the boy had gone. In the relaxed end-of-meal lull before the entertainments, Damon was given free rein to wander about and went to find him. Laurent was occupied, and for the first time there were not two guards looming perpetually over him. He could have walked out. He could have walked right out of the palace doors and from there into the surrounding city of Arles. Except he couldn't leave this place until Torvald's embassy departed with the slaves, which was, of course, the only reason he was off the leash at all. He didn't make very good progress. The guards might be gone, but Laurent's caress had bought Damon another type of attention. I predicted when the prince brought him to the ring that he was going to become quite popular, Vanis was saying to the noblewoman beside her. I saw him perform in the gardens, but it was almost a waste of his talents. The prince wouldn't let him take an active role. Damon's attempts to excuse himself had no impact on her at all.
No, don't leave us just yet. Talik wished to meet you, Vanis told Damon. She was saying to the noblewoman, Of course, the idea of one of us keeping males is grotesque, but if one could, don't you think he and Talik would make a good matched pair? Ah, here she is. We'll give you two a moment together.
They were departing.
I am Talik, the pet declared.
Her voice carried the strong accent of Vertan, the eastern province of Vask. Damon recalled someone saying that Vanis liked pets, who could sweep the ring competitions. Talik was almost as tall as Damon, her bare arms well-muscled. There was something slightly predatory about her gaze, her wide mouth, and the arc of her brows. Damon had assumed that pets, like slaves, were sexually submissive to their masters, as was the custom in Akalos. But he could only guess at the arrangements between Vanis and this woman in bed. She said, I think a warrior from Vertan would easily kill a warrior from Akalos.
I think it would depend on the warrior, he said, carefully.
She appeared to consider him along with his answer, and eventually to find both acceptable. She said,
We are waiting. Ansel will perform his popular in fashion. You've had him.
She didn't wait for him to confirm this statement.
How was he?
Well instructed. Damien's mind supplied the answer, sly as a suggestion murmured in his ear.
He frowned at it. He said, "Adequate." Talik said, "His contract with Lord Berenger ends soon. Ansel will seek a new contract, a high bidder. He wants money, status. He is foolish. Lord Berenger may offer less money, but he is kind and never puts pets into the ring. Ansel has made many enemies. In the ring, someone will scratch his green eyes out. An accident." Damon was drawn in against his will. "That's why he's chasing royal attention? He wants the prince to..." He tried out the unfamiliar vocabulary. "Offer for his contract?" "The prince," said Talik, scornfully. "Everyone knows the prince does not keep pets." "None at all?" said Damon. She said, "You." She looked him up and down. "Perhaps the prince has a taste for men, not these painted Varetian boys who squeal if you pinch them." Her tone suggested that she approved of this on general principle. "Nikkei's," said Damon, since they were speaking of painted Varetian boys. "I was looking for Nikkei's. Have you seen him?" Talik said, "There." Across the room, Nikkei's had reappeared. He was speaking into the ear of Ansel, who had to bend almost in half to reach the little boy's level. When he was done, Nikkei's made straight for Damon. "Did the prince send you?" "You're too late," said Nikkei's. "Too late for what?" was the reply in any court. "Except this one." He said, "If you've hurt any one of them..." "You'll what?" Nikkei's was smirking. "You won't. You don't have time. The regent wants to see you. He sent me to tell you. You should hurry. You're keeping him waiting." Another smirk. "He sent me ages ago." Damon stared at him. "Well, off you go," said Nikkei's. It was possibly a lie, but he couldn't risk the offense if it wasn't. He went. It wasn't a lie. The regent had summoned him, and when he arrived, the regent dismissed all those around him, so that Damon was alone at his chair. At the end of the softly lit hall, it was a private audience. Around them, heavy with food and wine, the noise of the court was warm and loosened. Damon made all the deferences that protocol required. The regent spoke.
"I suppose it excites a slave to plunder the treasures of a prince. You have taken my nephew?"
Damon stayed very still. He tried not to disturb the air when he breathed.
"No, Your Highness." "The other way around, perhaps?"
"No."
"Yet you eat out of his hand.
The last time I spoke to you, you wished him flogged. How else do you account for the change?" "You won't like my riposte," Laurent had said. Damon said carefully, "I'm in his service. I have that lesson written on my back." The regent gazed at him for a while.
"I'm almost disappointed if it's no more than that. Laurent could benefit from a steadying influence, someone close to him with his best interests at heart, a man with sound judgment, who could help guide him without being swayed."
"Swayed?" said Damon.
"My nephew is charming when he wishes it. His brother was a true leader. He could inspire extraordinary loyalty from his men. Laurent has a superficial version of his brother's gifts, which he uses to get his own way. If anyone could have a man eating from the hand that struck him, it's my nephew," said the regent. "Where is your loyalty?"
And Damon understood that he was not being asked a question. He was being given a choice. He badly wanted to step across the chasm that separated the two factions of this court. On the other side was this man who had long since won his respect. It was grittily painful for him to realize that it was not in his nature to do that, not while Laurent was acting on his behalf, if Laurent was acting on his behalf. Even if Laurent was acting on his behalf, he had so little stomach for the drawn-out game that was being played tonight. And yet... "I'm not the man you want," he said. "I don't have influence over him. I'm not close to him. He has no love for Akalos or its people." The regent gave him another long, considering look. "You are honest.
That is pleasing. As for the rest, we will see.
That will do for now, said the regent. Go and fetch me my nephew. I prefer him not to be left alone with Thorvald.
Yes, your highness.
He wasn't sure why it felt like a reprieve, but it did. A few inquiries made of other servants, and Damon learned that Laurent and Thorvald had retreated once again to one of the balconies, escaping the stifling crush inside the palace. Reaching the balcony, Damon slowed. He could hear the sound of their voices. He looked back at the thronging court chamber. He was out of sight of the regent. If Laurent and Thorvald were discussing trade negotiations, it would be better to delay a little and give them whatever extra time they might need.
Told my advisers that I was past the age to be distracted by beautiful young men, he heard Thorvald say, and it was suddenly eminently clear that they were not discussing trade negotiations. It was a surprise, but on reflection it had been happening all night. That a man of Torvald's honorable reputation would choose Laurent as the object of his affections was difficult to swallow, but perhaps Thorvald admired reptiles. Curiosity blossomed. There had been no topic that engendered more speculation than this one among courtiers and members of the prince's guard alike. Damon paused and listened.
And then I met you, said Thorvald. And then I spent an hour in your company.
More than an hour, said Laurent.
Less than a day. I think you get distracted more easily than you admit.
And you, not at all?
There was a slight pause in the rhythm of their exchange.
You have been listening to gossip.
Is it true, then,
that I am not easily courted? It can't be the worst thing you heard about me.
By far the worst, from my perspective.
It was said warmly, and won a breath of insubstantial amusement from Laurent. Torvald's voice changed, as though they stood closer together.
I have heard a great deal of gossip about you, but I judge as I find.
Laurent said, in the same intimate voice,
And what do you find?
Damon stepped forward determinedly. Hearing his footfall, Thorvald started and looked around. In Patras, affairs of the heart, or of the body, were usually private. Laurent reclined elegantly against the balustrade, did not react at all except to shift his gaze in Damon's direction. They were indeed standing close together, not quite kissing distance.
"Your Highness, your uncle has sent for you," said Damon.
Again, said Thorvald, a line appearing in the middle of his forehead. Laurent detached himself. He's overprotective, he said.
The line disappeared when Thorvald looked at Laurent.
You took your time, Laurent murmured as he passed Damon.
He was left alone with Thorvald. It was peaceful out here on the balcony. The court sounds were muted as though they were very distant. Louder and more intimate were the sounds of insects in the gardens below, and the slow back and forth of greenery. At some point it occurred to Damon that he was supposed to have lowered his eyes. Torvald's attention was elsewhere.
He is a prize, said Thorvald, warmly. I'll wager you never thought a prince could be jealous of a slave. Right now I would exchange places with you in a heartbeat.
You don't know him, thought Damon. You don't know anything about him.
You've known him one night.
I think the entertainment will begin shortly, Damon said.
Yes, of course, said Thorvald, and they followed Laurent back to the court.
Damon had, in his life, been required to sit through many spectacles. In Vere, entertainment had taken on new meaning. When Ansel came forward holding a long stick in his hands, Damon readied himself for the kind of performance that would make the patron delegation faint. Then Ansel touched each end of the stick to the torch in the wall bracket, and they burst into flame. It was a kind of fire dance in which the stick was thrown and caught, and the flame tossed and twirled, creating sinuous shapes, circles, and ever-moving patterns,
Ansel's red hair created a pleasing aesthetic alongside the red and orange fire, and even without the hypnotic movement of the flame, the dance was beguiling, its difficulties made to look effortless, its physicality subtly erotic. Damon looked at Ansel with new respect. This performance required training, discipline, and athleticism, which Damon admired. It was the first time that Damon had seen Varetian pets display skill in anything other than wearing clothes or climbing on top of one another. The mood was relaxed. Damon was back on the leash, being used very possibly as a chaperone. Laurent was acting with the carefully bland manners of one trying politely to manage a difficult suitor. Damon thought with some amusement, boxed in by your own cleverness. As Damon watched, Torvald's servant produced a peach, then a knife, then cut a slice at Torvald's instruction, offering it to Laurent, who blandly accepted. When he had finished the morsel, the servant brought forth a little cloth from his sleeve, with a flourish for Laurent to clean his immaculate fingers. The cloth was transparent silk, edged in gold thread. Laurent returned it, crumpled. "I'm enjoying the performance," Damon couldn't resist saying. "Torvald's servant is better supplied than you are," was all Laurent said. "I don't have sleeves to carry handkerchiefs in," said Damon. "I wouldn't mind being given a knife."
"Or a fork?" said Laurent.
A ripple of applause and a small commotion forestalled a reply. The flame dance was finished, and something was happening at the far end of the room. Balking like a green colt at the rein, Erasmus was being dragged forward by a Varetian handler. He heard a girl's fluting voice say, "Since you like them so much, I thought we could watch one of the slaves from Akalos perform." It was Nikkei's, here on the small matter of an earring. Torvald was shaking his head, congenially enough. "Laurent," he said, "you've been swindled by the king of Akalos. That can't be a palace slave. He isn't showing form at all. He can't even sit still. I think Castor just dressed up some serving boys and shipped them off to you. Although he is pretty," said Torvald, and then in a slightly different voice, "very pretty." He was very pretty. He was exceptional even among slaves chosen to be exceptional, hand-picked to be served up to a prince. Except he was clumsy and graceless and showing no sign of training. He had finally dropped to his knees, but he looked like he was staying there only because his limbs had seized up, his hands clenched as though cramped. "Pretty or not, I can't take 24 untrained slaves back with me to Basil," Torvald was saying. Damon took Nikkei's by the wrist. "What have you done?" "Let go, I haven't done anything," said Nikkei's. He rubbed his wrist when Damon released it, to Laurent. "You let him speak to his betters like that?"
"Not to his betters," said Laurent.
Nikkei's flushed at that. Ansel was still lazily twirling the fire stick. The flickering of the flames cast an orange light. The heat, when it came near, was surprising. Erasmus had turned white, as though about to vomit in front of everyone. "Stop this," said Damon to Laurent. "It's cruel. That boy was badly burned. He's afraid of the fire."
"Burned?" said Torvald.
Nikkei's said quickly.
"Not burned, branded. He has the scars all over his leg. They're ugly."
Torvald was looking at Erasmus, whose eyes were glassy and showed a kind of stupefied hopelessness. If you knew what he thought he was facing, it was hard to believe he was kneeling down waiting for it. Torvald said, "Have the fire put out." The sudden acrid smell of smoke drowned out the Varetian perfumes. The fire was out. Summoned forward, Erasmus managed a slightly better prostration and seemed to calm further in the presence of Laurent, which made little sense until Damon recalled that Erasmus had thought of Laurent as kind. Torvald asked Erasmus several questions, which Erasmus answered in Patron with shy but improving form. After that, Torvald's fingers somehow found their way to rest for a moment protectively on the top of Erasmus's head. After that, Torvald asked Erasmus to sit beside him during the trade negotiations. After that, Erasmus kissed Torvald's toe, then ankle,
his curls brushing against Torvald's firm calf muscle. Damon looked at Laurent, who had simply let all of this unfold before him. He could see what had made Torvald transfer his affections. There was a superficial resemblance between the prince and the slave. Erasmus's fair skin and burnished hair were the closest thing in the room to Laurent's gold and ivory coloring. But Erasmus had something Laurent lacked, a vulnerability, a need for caring, and a yearning to be mastered that was almost palpable. In Laurent, there was only a patrician coolness, and if the purity of Laurent's profile drew the eye, Damon had the scars on his back to prove that one could look, but not touch.
"You planned this," said Nicaise. His low voice was a hiss. "You wanted him to see. You tricked me," in the same voice a lover might have said. "How could you?" Except there was anger there, too, and spite.
"You had a choice," said Laurent. "You didn't have to show me your claws."
"You tricked me," said Nicaise. "I'm going to tell..."
"Tell him," said Laurent. "All about what I've done and how you helped me. How do you think he'll react? Shall we find out? Let's go together." Nicaise gave Laurent a look that was desperately, spitefully calculating. "Oh, will you?" "Enough," said Laurent. "Enough. You're learning. It won't be as easy to do next time."
"I promise you, it won't," said Nicaise, venomously.
And he left without, Damon noted, giving Laurent his earring. Fed, sated, and entertained, the court dispersed, and the council and regent sat down and began negotiations. When the regent called for wine, it was Ansel who poured it. And when he was done, Ansel was invited to sit beside the regent, which he did, very decoratively, with a well-pleased expression on his face. Damon had to smile. He supposed that he couldn't blame Ansel for ambition, and it wasn't a bad achievement for an 18-year-old boy. There were courtiers aplenty in Damon's homeland who would consider it the height of accomplishment to attain a king's bed, the more so if it was a position of any permanence. Ansel was not the only one to have gotten what he wanted tonight. Laurent had delivered all Damon had asked for, tied up neatly in a bow, all within the space of a day. If you put everything else aside, you had to admire it for sheer organizational efficiency. If you did not put everything else aside, you recalled that this was Laurent, and that he had lied and cheated in order to bring this about. You thought about Erasmus, dragged through a night of horrors, and about what it meant for an adult to trick and use a boy who, for all he soundly deserved it, was still only 13. "It's done," said Laurent, who had come to stand beside him. Laurent seemed bizarrely to be in a good mood. He leaned a shoulder rather casually against the wall. His voice was not exactly warm, but nor was the ice edge polished to cut. "I've arranged for Torvald to meet with you later to discuss the transportation of the slaves. Did you know that Castor sent them to us without any handlers from Akalos?" "I thought you and Torvald would have other plans. It just came out," Laurent said. "No." Damon realized that he was pushing at the limits of Laurent's good mood, so he said, not without difficulty, "I don't know why you did any of this, but I think the others will be well treated in Basel. Thank you." "You are permanently disgusted by us, aren't you?" said Laurent. And then, before Damon could speak, "Don't answer that question. Something made you smile earlier. What was it?" "It was nothing." "Ansel," said Damon, "he's finally found the royal patronage he was looking for." Laurent followed his gaze. He calmly appraised the way that Ansel leaned in to pour wine, the way that the regent's ringed fingers lifted to trace the line of Ansel's cheek. "No," said Laurent, without much interest. "That's done for appearance's sake only. I think not all the practices of this court would meet with the approval of Torvald's delegation." "What do you mean?" Laurent detached his gaze from the regent and turned it back on Damon, his blue eyes showing neither his usual hostility, nor arrogance, nor contempt. but instead something that Damon could not make out at all. I warned you about Nikkei's because he is not Counselor Odin's pet. Haven't you guessed yet whose pet he is? Laurent said. And then, when he didn't answer, Ansel is too old to interest my uncle.
Chapter 9. He was taken to see Torvald in the early morning, after a long interview with two patron servants, in which he dredged up all the knowledge he had regarding the treatment of slaves. Some of the questions he was asked he had no idea how to answer, others he was more comfortable with. Were they trained in patron protocols, and which guests could they be expected to entertain? Yes, they had language and protocol training in patron, as well as Vaskian, though perhaps not the provincial dialects. And of course they knew all that was needed of Akalas and Esthema. Not Vir, he heard himself saying. No one had ever believed there would be a treaty or an exchange. Torvald's rooms resembled Laurent's, though they were smaller. Torvald came out of the bedchamber looking well-rested, wearing only pants and an overrobe. It fell straight to the ground on either side of his body, revealing a well-defined chest, lightly haired. Through the archway, Damon could see the tumble of milky limbs on the bed and the burnished head. Just for a moment, he remembered Torvald making love to Laurent on the balcony. But the hair was a shade too dark, and curled. "He's sleeping," said Torvald. He spoke in a low voice, so as not to disturb Erasmus. He motioned Damon towards a table where they both sat. Torvald's robe settled in folds of heavy silk. "We have not yet," Torvald said, and there was a silence. Damon had grown so used to explicit Varetian talk that he waited, in the silence, for Torvald to say what he meant. It took him a moment to realize that this silence said all that was needed, to a patron. Torvald said, "He is very willing, but I suspect there has been some mistreatment, not only the branding. I brought you here because I wanted to ask you the extent of it. I am concerned that I will inadvertently..." Another silence. Torvald's eyes were dark. "I think it would help for me to know." Damon thought, "This is Vir, and there is no delicate patron way to describe the things that happen here." "He was being trained as a personal slave for the Prince of Akalas," said Damon. "It's likely that he was a virgin before he arrived in Vir, but not after."
"I see."
"I don't know the extent of it," said Damon.
"You don't need to say more. It's as I thought," said Torvald. "Well, I thank you for your candor and for your work this morning. I understand it's customary to give pets a gift after they perform a service." Torvald gave him a considering look. "You don't look like the type for jewelry." Damon, smiling a little, said, "No, thank you." "Is there something else I can offer you?" He thought about it. There was something he wanted very badly. It was dangerous to ask. The grain of the table was dark, and only the edge was carved. The rest was a smooth, plain surface. "You were in Akalas? You were there after the funeral ceremonies?"
"Yes, that's right."
"What happened to the prince's household after his death?"
"I assume it was disbanded. I did hear that his personal slaves slit their own throats from grief. I don't know anything more."
"From grief," said Damon, remembering the ringing of swords and his own surprise. The surprise that had meant he had not understood what was happening until it was too late.
"Castor was furious. The keeper of the royal slaves was executed for letting it happen, and several of the guard."
"Yes. He had warned Adrastus.
Castor would have wanted the evidence of what he had done blotted out. Adrastus, the guards, probably even the yellow-haired slave who had tended him in the baths. Everyone who knew the truth, systematically, would have been killed."
"Almost everyone." Damon took a steadying breath. He knew with every locked-down particle in his body that he shouldn't let himself ask, and yet he couldn't help it.
"And
"You cast?" Damon said. He said her name as he would have said it to her, without a title. Torvald gazed at him speculatively.
"Caster's mistress? She was in good health. The pregnancy is proceeding without incident."
"You didn't know? She carries Caster's child. Whether there will be a wedding or not is still in question, but certainly it's in Caster's interests to secure the succession. He gives every indication that he will raise the child as his heir," said Damon. It would have been her price. He remembered every perfect coil of her hair, like winding silk. "Close those doors." He looked up. And suddenly he was aware, from the way Torvald was looking back at him, that he had lingered on this topic too long.
"You know," said Torvald, slowly, "you resemble Caster a little, something in the eyes, in the shape of the face. The more I look at you, no, the more I see it. Has anyone ever,
no, remarked on it before? I'm sure Laurent would..."
"No," said Damon. It came out sounding too loud and too urgent. His heartbeat was loud in his chest, as he was dragged from thoughts of home back to this. Deception. He knew that the only thing standing between himself and discovery at this moment was the sheer audacity of what Caster had done. A right-minded man like Torvald would never guess at this kind of brazen inventive treachery.
"Forgive me, I meant to say that. I hope you won't tell the prince you think I look like Caster. He wouldn't be pleased by the comparison at all."
It wasn't a lie. Laurent's mind would have no trouble jumping from clue to answer. Laurent was too close to guessing the truth already. He has no love for the Acalon royal family. He should say something about being flattered to hear there was a likeness, but he knew he wasn't going to be able to get his mouth around the words. For the moment, at least, it distracted Torvald.
"Laurent's feelings about Acalas are too well known," Torvald said, with a troubled look. "I've tried to talk to him about it. I'm not surprised he wanted those slaves gone from the palace. If I were Laurent, I'd be suspicious of any gift from Acalas. With conflict brewing among the Kairoi, the last thing Caster can afford is a hostile neighbor on his northern border. The regent is open to friendship with Acalas, but Laurent... It would be in Caster's interests to keep Laurent off the throne." Trying to imagine Caster plotting against Laurent was like trying to imagine a wolf plotting against a serpent.
"I think the prince can hold his own," said Damon, dryly.
"Yes, you could be right. He has a rare mind."
Torvald rose as he spoke, indicating that the interview was done. In the same moment, Damon became aware that there were signs of stirring from the bed.
"I'm looking forward to a renewed relationship with Vere, after his ascension."
"Because he's bewitched you," Damon thought. "Because you're moonstruck, and you have no idea of his nature."
"You can tell him I said that if you like."
"Oh, and tell him I'm looking forward to beating him to the mark today," said Torvald, with a grin, as Damon made his way out. Damon, thankfully, for his sense of self-preservation, had no chance to tell Laurent anything of the kind, but instead was thrust into a change of clothing. He was to be taken out to accompany the prince. He didn't have to ask. Accompany him where? It was Torvald's last day, and Torvald was well known for his enjoyment of the hunt. The real sport was in Chastillon, but it was too far to go in a day, and there were some reasonable runs in the lightly wooded lands around Arles. So, only slightly the worse for wine the night before, half the court picked itself up around mid-morning and moved outside. Damon was transported ridiculously, on a litter, as were Erasmus and a few of the wispier pets. Their role was not to participate, but to attend their masters after the sport was done. Damon and Erasmus both were bound for the royal tent. Until the patron delegation departed, Damon was unable to attempt escape.
He couldn't even use the outing as a chance to see the city of Arles and its environs. The litter was covered. He did have a very good view of a series of figures copulating, which was the scene embroidered on the inside of the silk cover. The nobility were hunting boar, which the Varetians called sanglier, a northern breed that was larger, with longer tusks on the male. A stream of servants, up before dawn, or perhaps even working through the night, had brought all of the opulence of the palace outside, erecting tented pavilions, richly colored and covered in pennants and flags. There were a great deal of refreshments served by attractive pages. The horses were beribboned, and their saddles encrusted with precious stones. This was hunting with every leather exquisitely polished, every pillow plumped, and every need met. But despite all the luxury, it was still a dangerous sport. A boar was more intelligent than a deer or even a hare, which would run until it escaped or was overcome. A boar, fearsome, furious, and aggressive, would occasionally turn and fight. They arrived, rested, lunched. The party mounted. The beaters fanned out. To Damon's surprise, there were one or two pets among the riders milling about. He saw Talik on a horse alongside Vanis, and riding very neatly indeed on a pretty strawberry roan was Ansel, accompanying his master, Berenger. Inside the tent there was no sign whatsoever of Nikkei's. The regent was riding, but the child pet had been left behind. Laurent's words last night had been a shock. It was hard to reconcile what he now knew with the manner and the bearing of the man. The regent gave no sign of his tastes. Damon might almost have thought Laurent was lying, except he could see in Nikkei's actions all the ways it was true. Who but the regent's pet would behave as brazenly as Nikkei's did in the company of princes? Considering Nikkei's loyalties, it was strange that Laurent had seemed drawn to him, had seemed even oddly to like him, but who knew what went on in that maze of a mind? There was nothing to do but watch while the riders mounted and waited for the first signal of game. Damon wandered over to the mouth of the tent and looked out. The hunting party, sunlit, spanned the hill, flashing with jewels and polished saddlery. The two princes were mounted alongside one another, close by the tent. Torvald looked powerful and competent. Laurent, dressed in black hunting leathers, was an even more austere sight than normal. He was riding a bay mare. She was a beautiful mount, with perfectly balanced proportions and long hips made for hunting. But she was fractious and difficult, already covered in a thin sheen of sweat. It gave Laurent, controlling her under a light rein, a chance to show off his seat, which was excellent. But it was show without substance. The hunt, like the art of war, required strength, stamina, and skill with a weapon. But more important than all three was a calm horse. Dogs wove their way through the legs of the horses. They were trained to be calm around large animals, trained to ignore hares and foxes and deer, and focus on nothing but Sanglier. Laurent's fussy horse began acting out again, and he leaned forward in the saddle, murmuring something as he stroked her neck, in an uncharacteristically gentle gesture to quiet her. Then he looked up at Damon. It was wasteful of nature to have bestowed those looks on one whose character was so unpleasant. Laurent's fair skin and blue eyes were a combination that was rare in Patras, rarer in Akalos, and a particular weakness of Damon's. The golden hair made it worse. "Can't afford a good horse?" said Damon. "Try to keep up," said Laurent. He said it to Torvald after a chilly look at Damon. A touch of his heels and his mount moved out like she was part of him. Torvald, who was grinning, followed. In the distance a horn blew, announcing game. The riders kicked their mounts and the whole party streamed towards the sound of the horn. Hooves thundered after the baying of the hounds. The terrain was only lightly wooded, with trees scattered here and there. A large party could canter.
There was a clear view of the dogs and the front runners who were approaching a more heavily wooded area. The boar was somewhere under the cover. It was not long before the party was out of sight, through the trees, over the crest of a hill. Inside the royal tent, servants were clearing away the last of the luncheon, which had been eaten reclining on strewn cushions, the occasional hound wandering in, only to be pushed good-naturedly off the cloths. Erasmus was like an exotic ornament, kneeling obediently on a cushion the color of yellow apples. He had done a beautifully unobtrusive job of serving Torvald at lunch, and later in arranging his riding leathers. He was wearing a short tunic, in patron style, that exposed his arms and legs, yet was long enough to cover his scarring. Re-entering the tent, Damon looked nowhere else. Erasmus looked down and tried not to smile, and instead blushed, slowly and thoroughly. "Hello," said Damon. "I know that you have somehow arranged this," said Erasmus. He was incapable of hiding what he felt, and just seemed to radiate embarrassed happiness. "You kept your promise, you and your master. I told you he was kind," Erasmus said. "You did," said Damon. He was pleased to see Erasmus happy. Whatever Erasmus believed about Laurent, Damon wasn't going to dissuade him. "He's even nicer in person. Did you know he came and talked to me?" said Erasmus. "He did?" said Damon. It was something he couldn't imagine. "He asked about what happened in the gardens. Then he warned me about last night."
"He warned you," said Damon. "He said that Nicaes would make me perform before the court, and it would be awful, but that if I was brave, something good might come at the end of it."
Erasmus looked up at Damon curiously.
"Why do you look surprised?"
"I don't know. I shouldn't be." "He likes to plan things in advance," said Damon.
"He wouldn't have even known about someone like me if you hadn't asked him to help me," said Erasmus. "He's a prince. His life is so important. So many people must want him to do things for them. I'm glad I have this chance to say thank you. If there is a way to repay you, I will find it. I swear that I will."
"There's no need. Your happiness is repayment enough."
"And what about you?" said Erasmus. "Won't you be lonely, all by yourself?"
"I have a kind master," said Damon. He did pretty well in getting the words out, all things considered. Erasmus bit his lip, and all his burnished curls fell over his forehead.
"You're in love with him?"
"Not quite," said Damon. There was a moment of silence. It was Erasmus who broke it.
"I was always taught that a slave's duty was sacred, that we honored our masters through submission, and they honored us in return, and I believed that. But when you said that you were sent here as punishment, I understood that for men here, there is no honor in obedience, and it is shameful to be a slave. Perhaps I had already started to understand that, even before you spoke to me. I tried to tell myself that it wasn't